Ryan and Grable. I represent appellants Christopher Grissom and James Everard. I reserved 4 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, we have multiple points in our brief that merit your attention. But today, what I want to draw your attention to, what I think is a decisive point, specifically goes to the magistrate's report and recommendation and then the district court's adoption of the cause of action pertaining to First Amendment retaliation. This incident occurred in March 2018. By March 2018, it was clearly established that police officers in the state of Texas could not arrest people if it was motivated by engaging in First Amendment protected activity. Normally, what courts would do is if there was a finding of probable cause, that would negate this idea that the arrest was motivated by protected conduct. Here, though, this record is different. This record describes what could be applied more recently in the Nieves-Bartlett case, an exception to the probable cause requirement for a First Amendment retaliation case. Specifically, in Nieves v. Bartlett, the standard was whether or not there was objective evidence that would support the idea that the arrest was motivated by the appellant's exercising protected activity. And we have that here in this record. Specifically, the record shows that there was a history of protests, peaceful protests, in the city of Omos Park challenging an ordinance that was inconsistent with Texas law specific to the regulation of firearms. And furthermore, even the chief of police, Rene Valenciano, prior to the March 2018 incident, had been researching the activists who were protesting within the city. He had a phone call with Christopher Grissom, who is the founder of Open Carry Texas, where Grissom was asking about the city's stance on how they treat people that openly carry firearms within the city. Valenciano even proceeded to research Grissom, pulled up articles on him, knew what he looked like, read opinions about him, knew what his message and intent was, and that was to educate and to create dialogue concerning the right to carry firearms in Texas. And so by the time this event occurred on March 2018, everybody had knowledge and was clear that what was occurring was a protest.
Everybody didn't, because the 911 callers clearly didn't know.
Your Honor, the 911 caller specific reported that there was a man with a gun, but when that information was relayed to dispatch, even the dispatcher knew that it was the Second Amendment people. So the dispatcher relayed that information that it was the Second Amendment people without even needing additional information. And specific to that issue, Your Honor, as well, we're not saying that police shouldn't investigate 911 calls, but when they receive information, the law is that officers must also consider their knowledge and other information that would just as
well. Well, they didn't know it was the Second Amendment people. They got calls about an active shooter situation, right?
They did not, Your Honor. They got a call that there was a man standing on a street corner with a AK-47 around his neck.
So they didn't say active shooter, but I mean, they said those things, right?
They said all it was AK-47. Your Honor, and specifically, they also asked whether or not they were pointing the firearm at anybody. They said no, it just looked odd. That's the information that was reported to dispatch.
How are the officers supposed to know that's protected First Amendment activity?
Your Honor, in a normal, well, let me back up. If there was history not established in this, that we have in this case, let's say that there was no prior protests, no prior research, no prior information. I do think that, let me back up. When you look at probable cause, You look at the totality of circumstances. And if all the information that an officer has is that there is a person with a gun, that's all they go to operate on. But what we have here, Your Honor.
But you're saying because of this special, you're saying that because of this special knowledge, the, you know, prior awareness, that puts this in a whole different context that is a predicate for the retaliation you're alleging?
Yes, Your Honor. And the reason that is because the requirement for totality of circumstances is you even, that police officers should evaluate the knowledge known, right? It's the standard of an objective officer with the same knowledge as these police officers. These police officers that showed up at the scene in March 2018 had information of these prior protests. They knew instantly when they showed up that there was an individual, Evard, who was standing still on a street corner holding a camera. He was holding a camera. He had a firearm slung across his chest, a rifle across his chest. It was tight. It wasn't moving. He never touched it. And he was having dialogue with the responding officer. And that same officer also testified in deposition, which is in the record, to observing others standing around with video cameras recording what was occurring. And so I also asked the officers during deposition, which is in the record, about what information they had when they arrived about criminal activity being afoot. They all testified that they were not aware of any criminal activity being afoot. Specifically, Detective Ruiz in the record at 3608 talked about no criminal activity. Officer Vieira in the record at 3318 and then 3322 also testifies to not having any information that they were engaged in criminal activity. Officer Lopez at the record 3450 and even Chief Valenciano at 3508. And this is further supported by even the officer's own expert in this case when this idea that officers showed up and gave, quote, orders to the appellants, that the expert who is a police officer, former police officer, stated that they really weren't orders, but they were requests because there was no information to suggest that they were committing any crime. So even the dialogue by their own expert was considered to be a request rather.
But the plaintiffs disobeyed the officers.
Your Honor,
they refused to comply.
I think the standard is different in that they refused to comply with a request to get down on the ground. And it wasn't a specific refusal, Your Honor, as much as it was clarification of.
Did they comply or not comply?
Specifically with the request?
Yes.
Your Honor, they did not. The request was to get on the ground, and they did not get on the ground, or Everard did not get on the ground. The issue, though, is that they were. So our contention is that the police officers, when they arrived on the scene, they knew that they were not going to any criminal situation, but they knew that they were actually going to a protest. This was a continued protest, right? And if there's a fact issue.
What's your best case I'm hesitant to use the word brandishing because I don't know that they were brandishing weapons, but they're clearly significantly visible weapons. Where's your case that says that is protected First Amendment speech?
Your Honor, there is no case that says it's protected speech, but if specifically the act of carrying a firearm in the state of Texas by itself is lawful conduct. I cite to that in pages 22 and 37 of our brief, where specifically Texas law allows the open carrying of a firearm.
But you can't do it in a way calculated to cause alarm.
That's correct, Your Honor. You cannot. The standard is you have to display it specifically in a manner calculated to cause alarm.
But I guess I'm just grappling, is this a First Amendment case? In other words, they're retaliating against the plaintiffs for First Amendment rights exercise, or is it a Second Amendment case?
Your Honor, I think the what we presented here today in this case is that it's a First Amendment case because they were exercising their rights, of course, we would think both under the Second Amendment, but I think you get there by simply looking at what does Texas law allow.
But don't you have to show clearly established law that basically saying you can't walk around with an AK-47 strapped on as a protest is clearly established for the officers for the plaintiffs to defeat qualified immunity?
So, Your Honor, this is where I also think that the magistrate went a little backwards on it. And the reason I say that is because it's undisputed in this record and with the parties and even the magistrate that they were exercising a protest, right? The question was whether or not...
But they didn't necessarily need the guns to do that. And if they didn't have the guns on, they wouldn't have even been called out by the police officer. In other words, nobody would have called 911.
Well, but the problem with that, Your Honor, is that if they were not protesting and that they were just open carrying, they were still not breaking the law. Texas law authorizes them to carry the
rifle. Well, it does unless it's calculated to alarm people. And the question is not, did they commit that offense? The question is whether the officers would have had probable cause to suspect they were committing that offense once they got the 911 calls.
And so, Your Honor, once the only information that the officers had initially from dispatch, because the officers did not take the 911 call, was that there's a report of a man standing on the corner at the same location where all the other prior protests had occurred over the last couple of weeks. So they knew they were going to the same location. And the dispatch also told them, it looks like it's going to be the Second Amendment
people. Yeah, but they couldn't take that. That wasn't like, these are the Second Amendment people. We know they're just protesting. It says, it looks like that's what this may be. Are you contending that the police wouldn't have had probable cause to go out and investigate?
That's not what I'm contending at all, Your Honor.
What I'm trying to get to is, assuming they had the probable cause to go investigate it, even if they suspected it was the Second Amendment people, they get there, they see this AK, was it AK-47 or an AR?
It was a .22 long rifle.
I'm totally off. But either way, it was plainly visible, et cetera, and so forth. And so they go there, and I'm just grappling with where is the protected speech there that they're retaliating against? And or, I guess, so you've got that issue, and then the second issue is when they show up and they start, the plaintiffs disobey what the officers ask them to do, at that point, aren't they resisting?
They are not, Your Honor. I guess one of the things with resisting, of course, is it requires use of force, right? Some kind of use of force, which did not occur here. But as far as the protected activity, there was no question. The police chief showed up himself, right? Other officers over the course of a couple of weeks, the same officers that showed up had arrested prior people who were challenging this ordinance. The city was receiving phone calls. They were holding meetings. There was no dispute. The city was even sending out bulletins, safety bulletins, acknowledging that there were these protests about the ordinance, and we acknowledge that there is a right in Texas to open carry in Texas and in the city of Olmos Park. So there was no question that what was on everybody's minds was that there was a protest going on.
But how does that special knowledge in and of itself rebut any probable cause that they had based on the 911 call? I mean, they knew more than maybe, as you say, if it's just an isolated granted. But how does that in and of itself, or what's the best case you have that because the officers have special knowledge, more knowledge, additional knowledge, whatever way you want to put it, that gets in the calculus of negating the probable cause determination?
Yes, Your Honor. The first thing I would say is that simply receiving a report of a call does not establish probable cause. I do think it elevates, or you have reasonable suspicion to go and investigate further. However, once the officers arrived, they saw that individuals were standing around with cameras, to include Mr. Everard. They would have observed that he was not touching the firearm or moving, and that he was responding to their questions, and that Everard was also communicating that the ordinance itself was inconsistent with state law. So they made known immediately that it was purely about protesting the ordinance. And Officer Ruiz, when he showed up as well, he specifically acknowledged that when he looked around, he noticed that everybody just had cameras, there were no firearms. And so the issue that I think at least, at the very least, pertains to a fact question, right, is whether or not did the officers go out there and escalate and take the actions
they weren't responding to the cameras. No doubt there were a lot of cameras. Didn't Mr. I get the names mixed up, but the gentleman that had the green shirt, he had a sidearm, right?
Yes, Your Honor, which was also permissible under state.
Oh, my question wasn't meant to suggest it wasn't. I was just, we've talked about the principal weapon that was strapped, but the gentleman in the green, did he have a sidearm that was visible, and didn't the officer ask him, are you armed, et cetera?
Yes, Your Honor. And one more thing is the manner to calculate alarm, simply displaying a firearm, any officer with objective knowledge would know simply having a firearm strapped is not in any manner calculated to cause alarm. My time is up. Thank you.
Okay, well, you've reserved your rebuttal time. Thank you. All right, we'll hear from the other side.
Please, of course.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
The utmost duty of a police officer is to protect public safety and public health. That is their main duty. The state gives them the authority to do that, and it's a compelling state interest for the officers to do that. Our principal case is Lovett v. State. And it puts this principle, this basic principle, and applies it to this type of situation. In Lovett, they dealt with Second Amendment protesters, and they recognized that the duty or the obligation to protect the public, it was made more pronounced in when crowds are gathering and there's a perceived possibility of a threat. With regard to the 911 calls, the officers are not obligated, the officers are obligated to respond. If it's at the very least reasonable suspicion, then they have to appear and investigate. What the counsel indicated is that the officers was in an order, it was a request. And that's very pertinent because in Lovett, it states that when the right to open carry is not unlimited, there are circumstances that justify a police officer asking a lawfully armed citizen to put away a deadly weapon, and with that expectation of the police officer that that request will be honored. At the scene that the police officers arrived at, Officer Lopez appeared first. He saw Mr. Everett from a distance, who is a fairly large man. He did have the AR-15 or AK-47. It was described as a 22, but it was made up to look like a assault rifle. Officer Lopez asked him to get down or to go to the ground. One of the officer's directives when they appear at the scene is to make sure that the scene is safe. They don't know there's a Second Amendment. They don't know that there's going to be, Fourth Amendment right implications. They're just there to see what the situation is and make sure that the public peace.
But they did have this background knowledge that there was the prior protest, and they were the same location, same general profile. The dispatcher did note that's likely the Second Amendment people. So when they, what if counsel's argument that regardless of the reasonable suspicion or the authority to initiate an investigation, once they got there and investigated, we know what it is, it's okay.
Well, the information they received is the chief gave the officers the ex parte Poe case, 491 Southwest 3rd, 348, 2016. Because when there were prior individual instances, there was no prior big protests. The chief, as a good chief would do, is, well, let's find out what's going on. What are these guys? So he did some preliminary research, but there was nothing that the officers had a class, so they had a special meeting about it. It's, hey, read this Poe case. It's up to you if you do or not. We don't know if the officers read it or not. And the city manager put out a bulletin, I think, to other cities saying that, hey, you know what? There's Second Amendment people appearing in these cities around us, and just to let you know. But what she emphasized is that it is lawful to open carry a gun and rifle. When Mr. Grisham called the chief the day before they arrived in Alamos Park, the chief told him, you can carry a weapon lawfully and a rifle lawfully as long as you don't break any of the laws. Now, Mr. Grisham and Mr. Everett, that was the first time in Alamos Park. The police officers did know them. They had some background of, okay, these are the Second Amendment people, and this is what they do, or this is what, they usually do. But that call from the dispatch relays information. Dispatch does not know any of the facts. Dispatch's job is to, someone called and said this, I'm going to relay it to the officers. If it's right, if it's wrong, this is what I got, this is what I'm going to give them. So when the officers arrived, their utmost importance was to secure the premises, to make sure that it's safe. So one of the first things is to render a deadly weapon inoperable. So then the police could approach. Otherwise, if you approach someone who has a deadly weapon, the officer is going to gamble that that person is lawful or that person is not going to harm him, regardless of what that person says. I think in the Lovett case, the court indicated that you don't have to believe someone on the fly when they tell you something. So in this particular case, all the officers heard or saw was Mr. Everett saying no, or not saying no, but would not obey the officer's orders.
So counsel, is this, just help me conceptualize this. Is the hinge of the case whether the conduct was protected under the First Amendment or Second Amendment, or is the hinge of the case much more pedestrian? Is it just resisting arrest and what officers can do to secure the perimeter, so to speak?
It's a very simple case, Your Honor, is when they, and it does not involve any constitutional violations. It's a simple case of interference with the public duties, of the duties of a public officer, and resisting arrest. And there's the assault by Mr. Grisham, and there was blocking a sidewalk, or whatever that charge is called. That's generally it. When the officers got there, and the officers during the deposition were right. There was no crime being committed. There was no crime being committed until the point where Grisham was resisting arrest It started earlier with regard to disobeying an order. Disobeying an order is interfering with a police officer's duties under the Bueller case. Now, I didn't cite the Bueller case, but this is a March 2022 case from the Fifth Circuit. And in that particular case, they had Mr. Bueller, who was known to go videotape police officers. So they knew who he was. And in one particular instance is that he was, I guess, interfering with what the officers were doing by putting his camera in, and although he was told to stay back, he did not, after repeated directions to get back.
And we have law about filming.
Yes.
And there's that line between your First Amendment right to video and all that versus interfering with an officer's duties. But here, where's the line? I mean, why couldn't they protest by actually bearing arms?
They could protest. Well, they were protesting bearing arms. And there is no clearly established law at that time that said that the officer should have known that. I was mentioned in the magistrates.
Well, I mean, what they were doing was legal under Texas's gun laws, right?
That's correct, until it was not with regard to their behavior, not necessarily the weapons. When the infraction started, it first started when they would not obey orders. Second is when the Chief Valenciano approached Everett and asked him, for his license for his gun. Can he see his license, or does he have a license for his gun? And Mr. Grisham interjected and said, you don't need a license for a long rifle. Of course you don't. He knew that, the chief knew that, but he was purposely interjecting himself in the questioning of, or the information gathering, Mr. Everett. He was told to get back by not only the chief. When the chief approached, they were told to get down, and they didn't. Then the chief, they told Grisham to go back or get back, and so did Officer Vieira, who specifically told Grisham, you're interfering with the public duties. And he told him to get back, so at that time, he was, he was in violation of the interference with officers' public duties. And then, in quick succession, he was getting back. He wouldn't let Officer Vieira handcuff him. And then once he tried to handcuff him, he was resisting arrest. And during that resisting arrest, he was flailing his arms around and hit Officer Vieira. So there was assault against police officer. So bam, bam, bam. There was a probable cause for the arrest.
Well, what about counsel opposite's Nieves argument that this was all in retaliation because they knew who these people were? In other words, the officer showed up ready to pick a fight and basically penalize them for exercising their constitutional rights.
The officers weren't there to pick a fight. Mr. Grisham, after he spoke with the Chief Valenciano the day before, planned to go out there. He planned to go to Oswald's Park. He called people to make sure that they were there. He put the people in position. He put Mr. Everett on that corner because it was busy. Now, Mr. Grisham picked the day, he picked the time, and he picked the location. And when I asked him in his deposition, well, why did you come to Almost Park? And he said, I wasn't there to educate. I was there to test the waters, test the reality, see what happens, because they have this rally planned for almost 10 days later in April 7th. And so in his deposition, he said, well, we're going to put in one person, in this case, Mr. Everett. If it goes well, we can put in a second one. If it still goes well, he's going to put a third one, up to four people. He was looking to get a reaction from the police officers. And the issue of, well, we're going to here to protest our rights to bear arms was not even basically mattered. He was there to test the waters. So when these infractions occurred, that's when the officers placed him under arrest, had probable cause to place him under arrest. So the pretense of, okay, they don't like these people because they're First Amendment, well, they were filming, they didn't tell the Everett or Grisham not to film, the people around them were filming, officers didn't tell them to stop filming. The people who were the focal point were Everett and Grisham. And with regard to the tasing of Mr. Grisham, he had those three offenses in quick succession. And in addition, there's up to 9 individuals who were, they came in a little bit at a time. I think at the time of the arrest, there was around 9. Now, some of those were carrying weapons. In the videotape, some are concealed so you can't see them. Officer Valenciano's report on the incident indicated that when he parked, or before he was parking, he saw individuals leave cars who had concealed or had weapons, had handguns, but they were holstered. So he was aware when he got there that this isn't a regular situation. This is a situation that is threatening for the public interest and health. So first of all, I need to make sure that it's safe. And by making it safe is to make sure that those firearms are put in a situation where you can't grab it. When someone's on the ground, they don't have any, unless they're very fast, but regardless is that they are neutralized when they're on the ground when they have a weapon. And the police want to make sure that not only it's their safety, but the public at large. And they don't have to take the word of the person or put their lives on the line because they were told that I'm a Second Amendment protester or whatever. So the officers acted reasonably. The force used was the reasonable force that they had to be used to put these individuals under arrest. The situation, as all situations do with police officers, are quick. And with regard to qualified immunity, they did act reasonably. And also, there was no clearly established law that armed protests, that there could be armed protests without, that they could do it. They just appeared there, and there was nothing that the officers had notice of a prior case that said, hey, wait a second, you gotta,
Well, counsel opposite says the chief of police's prior knowledge and awareness and him showing up on the scene sort of accentuated the retaliation that's alleged here. I don't know if his deposition was taken or not. What do you say to that?
No, he was there because the call came in, and he's the chief. When he gets there, he's the one in charge. When he was approaching Everett and Grisham was looking for him. He said, are you the chief? And so it's his, he was there to try to, he's the only one who approached them and closely.
Oh, but back to Judge Stewart's question, why did he go? He doesn't go out on every 911 call.
That's true.
Why'd he go on this one?
Well, he heard that there was the man with a gun. He was just about to go home, but he's changed his mind and decided to go to the scene. And I think they would have to ask him for direction anyway, since there was one corporal, and then also Vieira, I think he just may be a regular patrolman. So the situation would call for the police officer, the police chief to be there, and I think the city would want that too, and the city manager would want the chief.
Well, but does all this give rise to a dispute of material fact as to why the chief was there and whether there was some retaliatory motive?
No, there's, you know, in this case, there's no disputed fact. He showed up and he was there. That's a fact. The video shows that he went up to him, told him to get down. They didn't. The chief in his deposition indicated that he's never seen Everett before. And Grisham, he's never met him personally before. And even Grisham had asked Chief Valenciano, are you the chief, are you the chief, are you the chief? So with regard to such speculation, it is just an assumption. It's conclusory that the chief was there because he doesn't like Second Amendment people protesting and exercising the First Amendment right. There's nothing substantive that was able to be shown, just speculation. And with that speculation, the plaintiffs want to turn that into disputable fact. And it's not, you can't create disputes in fact by what they thought Chief Valenciano was doing. He was there because he was doing his job. And the city, they indicate that the city ratified Chief Valenciano's actions because he had a policy of quashing the rebels. So the city knew that, and because they didn't do anything, they ratified it, which is the magistrate found there was no formal policy. There was not a policymaker. A final policymaker has to make that policy. There wasn't one. So it was the city should not be in this case either way. And the officers who were there, patrol officers, Officer Lopez, Officer Vieira, they were doing their jobs. The important thing is that...
Mr. Ruiz, you've got a red light, but...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead and conclude your... I'll give you wrap up your...
Yes, the Lovett case is our staple. This is what we are referencing. And it states that police officers' main duty is the health and protection of the citizen beyond anything else. Thank you.
All right, you cited the case Beulah, March of 22, which is not...
That is...
The ink is dry on it, so you didn't cite it in your brief. Did you...
Yes.
...let the other side know you were going to...
Yeah, and I gave him a copy when we got up here, Your Honor, and it couldn't follow electronically, because...
I'm just saying 28J is generally, you know, for something the ink is still wet on, just came out and, you know, let the court know, but something is out in 22. It was out there when y'all briefed, and so it's just the better part of things to put it in the brief or provide it ahead of time as opposed to late research. So it's just FYI going forward. We try to read it as quick as we can, but if the case was on the books, you know, when you're briefing and reply, push the case out and everybody has ample chance to respond.
Yeah, okay. I saw Fed fourth, and that's the first time I've ever seen a fourth edition.
All right, we'll dig through it. All right,
thank you. Thank you, sir.
All right, we're back to you, Mr. Crable.
Thank you, Your Honors. Squash the rebel.
Sorry?
Squash the rebel. Those are the words that Chief Valenciano relayed to dispatch after Everard and Grissom were arrested. During deposition, when I asked Chief Valenciano his meaning of rebel, he said it is people with anti-government viewpoints. And I asked him how he came to the conclusion that a rebel was occurring, He testified in deposition it was because of the, quote, totality of circumstances of everything that had already occurred. So Valenciano, the record establishes, it's not conclusory, it's not speculative, the record before you establishes that Valenciano, from all the prior incidents, his research and information, and his own assumptions that he relayed to police officers, that this protest against the ordinance was anti-government and it's something that he wanted to, quote, squash. And he even declared that day at the incident. It's his words. You have video is in the record of this. And so when we're talking about this retaliatory motive, I do think, or I don't think, there is a genuine issue of material fact and all favorable, and it should be viewed favorable with the appellants. I want to touch back on the—
Is there anything in the videos, words of the chief or the other officers that speak to, you know, this retaliatory position you're taking, or said differently, is there anything in the video, words that they say on the video that, you know, support what you're saying about the retaliation other than they're being out there, the chief's out there, the city's relying on, you know, gave them a directive, you know, get on the ground, et cetera. I guess you don't dispute the fact that they didn't get on the ground. But I mean, those naked facts, if you will, I don't know what your argument is, but I'm just saying, are there any words on the video from the chief or somebody that refute those being the actions that occur out on the street corner?
No, Your Honor, the only words we have on the video are those of Chief Valenciano. When the officer Vieira had a dialogue with Everard, Everard was trying to explain, look, tell me what crime I committed and I'll get on the ground. That's what he said. And as we just heard and counsel has conceded, they weren't committing a crime at that point. So if he wasn't committing a crime, he was confused why he was being told to get on the ground. And then he proceeded.
But you also heard, you know, counsel say, you know, they were out there, preserve the public safety, et cetera. They're not disputing that there's a right to carry, but the first gentleman, I get the names confused, but the first gentleman with the weapon across him has his weapon out, then the gentleman with the green shirt, he has a sidearm, but I guess it's visible. So I mean, I guess the question is, do the officers have to negate the public safety interests, you know, seeing the weapons and taking actions to ensure that there isn't alarm and harm? I mean, are you arguing that they can't do that without necessarily stepping on the First Amendment rights?
Your Honor, I think we need to start with the first concept that the First Amendment protects the right to protest. I also want to make clear, too, that Olmos Park did not have any prohibition on protest. So we're not talking about whether...
What about armed protest?
Go ahead.
So, Your Honor, this country was founded based on armed protests. No one disputed this idea that they were engaged in a protest until the magistrate said it. I think it'd be a different analysis if we were talking about an actual law or regulation that prohibited or tried to restrict protest by saying you can't carry weapons. But when you look at it, both activities separately were lawful. They had a right to display a firearm, right? Not in a manner calculated to cause alarm, but simply just carrying a firearm.
But there's nothing, you're not arguing that the city is taking the position they didn't have that right, right?
No, the city.
I mean, they're acknowledging the right, the Texas law, the right to carry, whatever the Olmos Park deal. I mean, none of the depositions, I guess, they haven't pushed back, no, that's not the law, it's a bad law, yeah, 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 right?
That's correct, Your Honor, but in practice, you had a chief of police where every time there was a protest on that specific street corner, that people were getting detained and arrested and charged, and that is really what the problem is. This was intended to be a protest, and it worked.
I mean, we're looking at this case. I mean, I take as true what you're saying about the other events. I'm not saying they don't happen. I don't have knowledge. I'm just trying to focus in, and we're not dismissing, or at least I'm not, the context you're giving us, so don't get me wrong, but just trying to focus in on here, you seem in some ways to argue because the chief had this other knowledge, he or the other officer shouldn't have showed up on the scene, and that their showing up on the scene is somehow indicative of a pushback on the right. I don't think that's what you're arguing, but it seems that there was something illicit about the chief showing up because he had the prior knowledge of the other officers. So despite the 911 call, you know, they shouldn't have gone. If it was just the First Amendment people, they should have just said, oh, well, it's not a crime being committed. No need to go out there, blah, blah, blah. But that can't be the law, right?
Well, Your Honor, when you look at the record and
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm just, you know, trying to probe it. You know more about it than we do. We're just trying to get a grip on it.
I understood completely, Your Honor. What the record demonstrates is that, obviously, the law is that an officer's observations and knowledge obviously go to probable cause, and officers likewise have a duty to negate probable cause. And the problem is, when you look at what the magistrate's report and recommendation was, it was taken in a vacuum on the events that just occurred on that day. The magistrate gave no credit to—
Well, let me ask you this. Putting aside, you know, the magistrate, what the magistrate judge said, you know, we review judgments, not reasons, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, so there's plenty of times judges say things, magistrate or otherwise, you know, whatever. But we look at, you know, the judgment, okay? So the judgment in the case is that, you know, the officers had probable cause, et cetera. So whether he didn't do something or whatever. So you're not arguing that probable cause is irrelevant to, you know, what we're looking at in a First Amendment context, right?
Your Honor, I think it's a two-step analysis, the first being, well, three-step. First, are they engaged in protected activity? And then two, does the Nieves-Bartlett exception apply? And if not, then you would, of course, do a probable cause evaluation. Did that answer your question, Your Honor?
It does. I mean, you know, just trying to get it. I mean, the premise of it, I like Judge Wilson's word, I forgot what it was, the fulcrum of the case. I mean, at bottom, the determination was the officers had probable cause to do as they did, notwithstanding whatever other knowledge they had based on the call, et cetera, et cetera. And if they had probable cause, then, you know, that's not dismissed from the calculus. And you seem to be arguing because of all the special knowledge, awareness, other protests, et cetera, somehow that kind of neutralizes, those are my words, not yours, but either alters the calculus somehow, and I'm just trying to, you know, hone in on, you know, exactly, zero in, if you will, you know, on the precise argument that you're making, but not trying to put words in your mouth.
That's correct, Your Honor. I don't want to discredit the totality of circumstances analysis. I do think there are significant factors that come into play to include the prior knowledge. But separately from that, the record establishes at least a fact question as to whether or not Rene Valenciano and his police officers went out that day the way they did and took the actions they did to stop an ongoing protest of a group of people that they viewed were anti-government and they didn't agree with the position, that this was purely to silence a viewpoint that they did not agree with. And so even Pelley's brief opens up with the fact that Everard and Grissom are activists and that they have a viewpoint. And so they were treated in a certain way because of that viewpoint. At the end of the day, I don't even know.
Police officers go out on scenes and ask people to get on the ground and so forth in other situations, right?
Well, Your Honor, again, when you apply the prior knowledge aspect and you look at the knowledge that was absolutely available to these officers, counsel cited to the Poe case. When you actually read the Poe case, there's a reference to Grissom's affidavit as the founder of Open Carry Texas, where Grissom communicates that the whole intent of Open Carry Texas and doing these protests is to educate the public. You don't want to cause alarm. You want to educate, because when you educate, you create dialogue, right? And that's the focus they wanted to do, was to create dialogue. And they weren't breaking the law by going out there with a holstered firearm. They weren't breaking the law when they had a strapped 22 long rifle standing still. Neither Grissom nor Everard ever touched that firearm, ever.
All right, well, let me ask you this. I know I've carried you past, but it's okay. Are there, counsel officers, is there no disputed facts, blah, blah, blah. It looks like y'all have taken a ton of depositions and all that. But are there disputed facts, given what you've argued about the magistrate judge's report, are there disputed facts, and if so, that warrant some kind of remand to clear up or whatever? I'm not saying they are. I'm just asking a question. Or is it your view, with however many videos there are, audios, depositions, and whatever, everything that could be said has been said?
Yes, Your Honor, I do think there are disputed facts specifically to the knowledge available to the officers, right, as to what their purpose was leading up to that event, but also purpose of going out there. And separately, disputed facts about to what was their motivation for actually interacting. What counsel has represented is all these charges came after the plaintiffs refused to stop their protest. They had a right to protest. They were in, and if there was no safety threat, they knew there wasn't a safety threat because—
Were those officers deposed?
Say again, Your Honor?
Were those officers deposed?
They were, yes, Your Honor. And they're
They weren't asked all that?
They were asked all of that. They acknowledged that.
What would the additional, I guess I'm trying to get to, what would be the additional fact finding from whom? Those same persons or different people or whom?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, Your Honor, I think because the summary judgment stage, I think there's fact issues that need to, I think, can only be resolved by a jury.
Okay.
About the motivations, right?
How does an officer's subjective motivations or personal motivation, I mean, we don't consider those kinds of things in the normal probable cause analysis, do we?
Your Honor, there's a difference between subjective motivations and objective knowledge and information available to an officer.
Aren't you really, you're talking about objective knowledge that leads to a subjective motivation for showing up?
Your Honor, I don't want to do this improperly, but there was a recent Fifth Circuit opinion that came out, Isles v. Bailey, which actually talks about an officer's obligation to negate, to also consider facts and information to negate probable cause, that's just as much of a duty of an officer as it is to identify facts where probable cause exists. And so it goes back to the whole principle that you don't look at information in a vacuum. You look at the entire context of the situation. Now, the motivation is subjective with respect to was the arrest retaliatory and does the Nieves-Bartlett exception apply?
So. All right. We took you over, Mr. Grable, but I think you got your extra shots in anyway, so you at least can't say you got cheated as far as getting your arguments done. But it's, you know, it's an interesting case, to put it mildly, and we appreciate the briefing and responses by both sides on the case. So the case will be submitted and we'll figure it out as best we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, this concludes the orally argued cases for the panel today. We'll stand in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow.